Well, good morning. I'd like to join Brent in saying we're so glad you're all here with us today. For those who don't know me, I'm Ryan Lenners, and I'm a team pastor here at Ashworth Road. And today it is my privilege to conclude our journey of our spring cleaning series, and as we all should have been now, spring cleaning our lives. Over the past 3 weeks, we've discussed clearing out the clutter of our stuff, of our souls, and of our time. The first week when we launched this series, we kicked off this spring cleaning drive that's outside as I talked about all the excess in our lives and how all that excess and stuff and clutter that we bring into our homes actually chokes out our relationship with God as we have to maintain it, and we have to clean it, and we have to store it somewhere, and we have to pay for it. So we encouraged you to go through your belongings and to clear out all the excess and to bring the items that could help these two causes we had to our church so that we could give all that extra to somebody who could use it today rather than having it sit on your shelf or in your basement unused for who knows how long. And then the second week, Pastor Brent talked about the importance of clearing out our souls through a regular time of confession. That time that we need to spend bringing our sin to God and repenting of it, turning away from it, and then allowing Him to take it from us and to purify us. We don't need to carry around our guilt and our shame and our sin with us like some people have done for a long time, feeling this weight on their shoulders like they just have screwed up so bad. We need to let God take it and trust that He has purified us once and for all and that we have a clean soul on the inside. And then last week, Pastor Brent gave us the powerful visual where he brought this jar of water and he put sand inside of it. And he stirred it all up and that clear water became so cloudy you couldn't see through it at all. And it was an illustration of our lives, that our lives are so full of clutter and all these things and time commitments that are stirring around and worrying around so much that we can't see God if we tried. And He encouraged us like the glass that He just set down. And in time, all the sand and the sediment dropped to the bottom and we could see through the water clearly. He said, we need to find time to just sit in the quietness to hear God's whisper so that God can clearly speak to us and show us what He wants to show us. And our hope, as with every series, is that you're taking these lessons and actually putting them into practice. Otherwise, you're just smiling and nodding your head at us while we preach. And that feels really good, I'll be honest. Like, if I'm ever in a bad spot and you can tell, just smile and nod, and that might be all the encouragement I need to keep going. But if that's all you do and you go out of here and you don't do anything with your life, then you're not growing spiritually and you're allowing that clutter to continue to keep all your ability to connect with God. It stays in the way. So we're hoping that you're clearing out this clutter so that you can better connect with God, that you can hear His voice and obediently follow His lead. And today I want to talk about the final area of our lives that we all need to sort through, and that's our finances. Maybe some of you refer to your finances as your checkbook because you're paper writers. Others, your finances are all found on your credit card statement because you like to do that more. But whatever you call it, whether it's your checkbook or your credit card statement or your bank statement, whatever you call it, the Bible says that as we look through it, it will expose and reveal where your heart is. In Matthew 6:21, Jesus says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And I understand nobody in this room would ever say that our hearts chase after stuff, but our bank statements may say otherwise. If you've ever done a budget before, you've had that moment where you categorize every line item of your bank statement. Groceries, eating out, household items, car payment, mortgage payment, house repair, you go through it all. But then the worst part is you total up each category, and sometimes you get totals that are a little bit startling. You look at your grocery bill and you're like, wow, it takes $1,000 a month to feed my family. Like, I knew my boys ate a lot, but that's a lot of money for groceries. Or it's the eating out or the household decorations, or maybe you do it around Christmas time and you knew you went a little overboard on Christmas this year, but then when you add up the dollars, your jaw drops and you're like, wow, I spent a lot on Christmas. Maybe it's your hobby. Maybe it's even coffee. For me, it was coffee. The one year I did a budget with my wife, she didn't really want to do the budget. Now I know why. So we total it all up, and I realized how much we love coffee. Like, my coffee bill that I love so much, apparently, was so high, it showed that we appreciate very much great coffee. Where we spend our money shows where our heart is. And it's because of this clutter of our finances, these items that we keep purchasing and subscribing to and paying for, that perhaps some of you in this room are right now filled with anxiety. Because you don't know where your money is going to. You don't know if you have enough money to pay the bills that are coming back in. Maybe for others of you, it's causing repeated arguments with your spouse. You know, they say money is the number one cause of relational stress and of divorce. There's numerous statistics throughout the years. I double-checked it because, you know, sometimes pastors just say stuff so often that everybody believes it to be true. There's actual studies on this. Like, this is, over time, year after year, finances always remain at the top of relational issues between spouses. Or maybe you fall into this category that the obligations for the debt that you already owe are so great that you have to pay on that month after month, and as a result, you don't have the ability to generously give to the organizations or your church the way that you wish you could, because you look at your checkbook and you're just like, I simply don't have the money to give to the places I want to. And if that's you, then this is fantastic, because today, that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at what Jesus tells us about money, where we're to spend it and invest it, and the relationship that we're supposed to have with our money. Now, I already jumped into our text a bit, but if you want to go in the Bible, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 6, which is on page 787 in the Brown Pew Bibles in front of you, and we're going to look at the entirety of this section of where Jesus is teaching his disciples through this entire section, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, it's known as the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus is teaching a rather large group of his disciples up on a hillside about how they are to live their lives in a way that is pleasing to God. I'm going to begin by reading chapter 6, verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Now, a quick note I have to say here is in your Bible, that new NIV, which came out in 2011, it says where moths and vermin destroy. Most of you, if you've read the Bible, know it from a long time ago. It's moths and rust. That word there, that word change that appears in our Bibles, is really the word for worm, which was more widely known as just a corrosive, consuming effect. So for a long time, they called it rust. Recently, it changed to vermin. The one thing we know is when they print Bibles, they try to print them in a way that people talk today. And that's why Bibles change over time. And for many of us in this room, we no longer use the King James, which was written 400 years ago, and English back then doesn't apply to us the same way today. So it's just keeping up. But that's why your Bible might say rust and vermin. Many say moths and vermin. Old ones said moths and rust. I digress. Here's the first phrase in here. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. What does that mean, to store up for yourself treasures on earth? Does that mean collecting cash, putting it in money bags, and stuffing it under your bed? Does that mean saving and putting it in your savings account or putting it in your 401k and saying, I'm going to make sure that I always have enough money that I never have to worry? I think storing up treasures on earth really points to our general feelings of self-sufficiency or our feelings of pleasure, or our feelings of security or personal value that we derive from the things that we buy. It's not specifically about going out and buying something and, well, that's your treasure here on earth. We all have to use money to buy things. It's when we fall into the trap of believing that what we're buying is giving us happiness, that it's actually giving us security, that it's actually giving us value, when those are things that can only come from our Creator. Okay, that's when we're putting our treasure on things of this earth. So we can put all of our trust in a big retirement account, or we can buy a fancy car, or take the fancy vacation to try to impress others that we see doing the same things. to show them that we are important. But when we do that, that's what it looks like to be putting your treasures here on earth. But this verse continues, as fast as we can make money, we can lose it even faster. In Jesus' day, people essentially diversified their portfolio. It was common to buy fancy linens or rare metals and to have those around as decoration or to store the value, the money that they had rather than in actual coins. And these were items, the linens and the valuable metals, that the common moth or the effects of rust could easily ruin. And for us, it's not moths or rust that we worry about stripping our wealth or our possessions, but perhaps the things that can strip our wealth or our possessions are things like a fender bender in your rather new car. I just did that to myself this week, pulling out of my driveway in my new-to-me car of the last few months into my less new-to-me car in the driveway, so now it's not one car but two that have paint. They just exchanged a little bit of paint. But what that does is it exposes my heart very quickly, doesn't it? When something that I care about, how much do I care about it? Am I going crazy about this because I have blue paint on the white car and white paint on the blue car? Or is this something where I go, you know what? It's only a car. It's going to be okay. You've probably had something like that in your life that's taken away from you. Maybe it's a new dress, new shirt, new slacks that you catch on a sharp table edge, and all of a sudden you have that snare, that fabric that tears out. And you're like, no, I liked it so much, and now it's ruined. Perhaps for you it's the stock market correction that's underway right now, or the unexpected and expensive home repair. Whatever it is, when the things that you value are taken from you or ruined in a way, it exposes your heart. And is this something that your heart has been storing up this treasure in this item? Or is this something that you truly said, no, God, I appreciate it. I'm glad that you blessed it to me, but I'm okay that it got destroyed. Your reaction to these bad things shows if this was your treasure stored up on earth. Jesus continued telling them how they should store their treasures in verse 20. He says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin or rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Jesus told the crowd that a treasure on earth is temporary and it's not going to last. All of it will eventually be consumed and destroyed. But treasure in heaven is treasure that will last. Nobody can steal the money from you that you're putting towards the things of God or that you're blessing others with or blessing the church. In fact, Jesus is telling us this because if we could see the big picture the way that Jesus sees the big picture of our earth today and our heavenly future tomorrow, then we'd want to be storing as much as we could into this heavenly account as we possibly could. That's why he's telling us this. It's good for us, he's saying. Come on, invest in heavenly things. Stop investing in earthly things. You're going to want to do this. The rewards are going to be incredible. And while money can buy us almost anything in this life, one of the few things on this earth that money can't buy us is our relationship with God. Even if you give all your money away to the poor, that by itself still can't purchase your relationship with God. You can only build your relationship with God from your heart, not from your pocketbook. And that's exactly where Jesus goes next. He's saying, store up your treasure in heaven, but you're not buying God by doing that. He continues, though, this is how he explains it. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where you put your treasure simply shows where your heart already is. You see, today's message really isn't about finances and money. That's just the guise for asking ourselves, what is our heart's inclination towards money? Is money and all that it can buy the most important things to us? Or is it God who gives us money and blesses us with things? Is he the one who's most important to us? Jesus is saying that where we put our treasure, our heart is found. Essentially, how we use it exposes our innermost being. And sometimes we don't even understand or recognize where our heart is. I didn't know how much we loved coffee or how much we loved, there were other things in the budget that were mine. You don't realize it until you evaluate it and you look at it and you go, wow, I spend a lot of money on these things. Are these things really that important to me, especially in comparison to how I'm investing my treasure in heaven? Let's add that up and let's add all the things I spend on myself. How's that scale come out? Now, we need to note here, nothing is being said about wealth being inherently evil. That's not what Jesus is saying. In fact, because he's teaching these peasants who are from the area around Galilee, these are farmers and herdsmen and people that are living day by day based on what they're able to sell their crops or their cattle for. They're living essentially from one growing season to the next. And so it's even to these impoverished people that he's still teaching about the attitudes that we have towards our riches. And that's because whether you have a lot or you have a little, we all struggle with a heart of greed. We all struggle with that thought of, oh, I really wish I had that. Whether you're making $100,000 or you're making $20,000, we all have that same heart compulsion. And that's why Jesus is saying, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You can evaluate your heart based on how you spend your money. And additionally, what's in our heart plays out by how we see the world all around us. And that's where Jesus goes in these next verses, 22 and 23. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, I just lost that, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Here Jesus moves from our heart's condition to the condition of our eyes. And let me take a moment here to jump into the original languages, because when you read these verses from where we were and where we're going, they don't make a lot of sense. You're like, why is he talking about the eyes? When Jesus says the phrase, if your eyes are healthy, that's really in the Greek translated often as sincere or as generous. To have good eyes would be to be sincere or generous, is what good eyes, that phrase meant often in the Greek. Conversely, the Greek behind the phrase for eyes that are unhealthy is literally evil eyes. And evil eyes, that phrase in the Bible, a few other verses, even in Matthew chapter 20, gets translated in this same Bible, the NIV, as jealous. So now if good eyes are generous and bad eyes are jealous, let's take a look at this again. We see then that if our eyes are generous, we will be full of light. And if our eyes are jealous, we will be full of darkness. If our eyes are looking for ways to bless others, to look for opportunities, to seed into the kingdom of God, to give things away, to help people in need, if we have good eyes, then we'll be filled with light on the inside. That'll be a light inside for us as we're connecting with God. That's going to be a light to others around us. Conversely, if we have bad eyes, evil eyes, if we have jealous eyes, everything we're looking at is for ourselves. How can I take care of myself? How can I get that to make myself happier? Then we're in the darkness. Then we're empty. Maybe you know people that have lived at either of these two extremes. You know somebody who's incredibly generous. And when you're with them, you see the joy and the contentment and the satisfaction they have in giving to others freely and meeting needs whenever they can. And you go, yeah, that's what it looks like for somebody to have light inside of them. And then there's that person you know who's the Scrooge, who's the stingy one who holds on to their money, that they'll only give you something if they know that you're going to give back in return the exact amount. And you know that person, they've got that darkness, they have that emptiness, they're not the kindest person, they're not the type of person you want to be around. That's essentially what Jesus is describing in these two verses. It flows from our heart, it's how we invest our money, and it's how we see the world all around us. And finally, Jesus comes to his bottom line in verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. No one can serve two masters. This word slave is technically slave, the serve. We all understand a slave couldn't be a slave to two masters. You have a slave has one master that's calling all the shots. Jesus is using that same language to get the point across. You can't be a slave to both God and money. You have only one. You have to choose. Who are you going to serve, your money or your God? There's no room to think that you can submit your life to your God, but also be saving all your money so that you can take care of yourself, so that you're self-sufficient, so that if anything bad happens, you can take care of it. You can't do both. Either you trust God with your life and with your future, or you trust yourself and your money. We think that our hard-earned money can do more than it actually can do until we really go through tough times, and then we realize all the money in the world that we might have had saved up still doesn't get us through those difficult times. And that's when we realize it's our relationship with God that's the only thing that can carry us through that. And that's where the clutter of our financial lives comes from, though. It's from trying to be both a servant to God and to money. It's when you're trying to serve God, but you still trust in your retirement savings. And as a result, the last 2 or 3 weeks have been a little bit heartburn-inducing for you. It's when you buy the nice big house for your family and the cars like your neighbors, only to be in debt up to your eyeballs, just like your neighbors. The difference is they don't care about investing in heavenly treasure, and you do. So when they don't have any money to invest in heavenly treasure, they don't care. But you should. It's when you splurge on the toys for the kids and maybe some of the big toys for you. Have you ever noticed adult toys cost way more than kids' toys? Like kids' toys, $5 and they're happy as a clam. Adult toys, a lot more. We all know that, whatever it is, your toy that you've purchased. But you put your money down on that. And then after you have spent your money on your house and your car and your toys and your dining out and your vacation and all the odds and ends that have come up or broken or needed to be paid for, at the end of the month, you realize maybe you don't have anything left to invest in heavenly treasure, or not nearly as much as you'd hoped. And then, as a result, a message like this makes you feel guilty because you understand that your finances are out of whack from the teachings of Jesus. You know that you should be investing in heavenly treasure. Maybe that's not a new concept to you, but you know that you simply haven't been able to up to this point. And so you feel this guilt on the inside that what you know you should be doing isn't what you're actually doing. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think that anybody in this room who's a Christ follower doesn't care about heavenly treasure. I think we all do. The problem is that some of us have just failed to manage what we have, and oftentimes we end up spending it all on ourselves. And maybe it's when we spent it, we thought to ourselves, but I didn't have any options. I had to pay the mortgage. I had to pay for the car. I had to pay that credit card bill. I had to pay that student loan. That's why I don't have anything left. But those payments are really the result of decisions that were made in the past. The credit card bill was the result of every time you did this a month earlier. Or the car payments, the result of what you thought you could afford maybe years earlier, but that decision has been affecting you now for a long time. And having nothing left to invest in heavenly treasures exposes our wrong thinking. And this is what I want to talk about for a moment. How are we maybe thinking about things in the wrong way that's affecting why we don't have as much to give towards heavenly treasures as we'd like? The first reason is maybe because we have the wrong priorities. Not having anything left at the end of the month to give to the church or to give to any other thing that you feel God's prompting you to give to, it exposes that you have put your value on the things that you need rather than understanding that your money is God's money and that you need to be protecting it and using it the way that God has instructed you to use it. So it exposes that you have idols in your heart. And I understand we don't have actual idols that we worship. And we don't. None of us would say we worship money. But the items that money allow us to purchase are things that we sometimes collect and we put too much importance on. The car that I purchased in December that I took paint off of March 1st could have been an idol in my life that I went crazy about. Some people do. I've watched people go crazy over a little thing like that. You know, that would become an idol if I'm going crazy about that. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about, how it can expose wrong priorities if we have nothing left to give towards these important causes. Secondly, when we fail to invest in heavenly treasure, it shows a misunderstanding of God's economy. This is the big point that I think many of us miss with our finances, and that's that the faith that it takes to be obedient to God and trust that He'll take care of us somehow, in some way, if we are faithful to give what He's calling us to give. When He's nudging you and saying, no, you can do it. Give that amount of money to the church. Give that amount of money to planting churches in India like we did back in October when we raised that money. He's saying, have faith in me. Give that amount of money. Some way, somehow, I'll still take care of you. I'll still provide. You see, we fall victim to the lie that every single dollar that we give to something to be generous is a dollar that we don't have to spend on ourselves. But that's small pie syndrome. That's thinking that in God's economy, every dollar that I give away is a dollar I don't have, and God will never bless me or take care of me or provide for me. I have to provide for myself. But that's not how it works. God is the God of all the wealth in the entire universe. If you're obedient to Him and He says, hey, I want you to give a gift to this person or to this cause, and you're like, but I don't have it. No, be obedient and do it, because guess what? God is the God of provision. He's going to take care of you. It's going to be okay. But we sometimes think, well, I'm not going to have that money because we don't understand. God may provide some other way so that we can continue to be His generous hands giving money to the people that He wants to meet needs for. Maybe you're the person that's going to be the answer to prayer for somebody else, but you have to hear God, obey God, and actually do it and trust it'll be okay. He'll still take care of me. It's like the widow in the Bible that Jesus sees. She walks up to the temple, and the Bible says that she puts in her last two mites. They're small, essentially worthless coins. They wouldn't have mattered at all to the temple system, which was so rich. And Jesus commends her to those around Him, and He says, look, she gave everything she had. And while the Bible doesn't share the rest of her story, I can imagine that God still provided for her. She gave everything she had. And I bet that she didn't die of starvation that night, but it's simply she gave it and God continued to provide for her day after day after day. So we have to understand, a dollar given is not a dollar lost. A dollar given is a dollar given, and God's going to want to give us more dollars so that we can continue to give and be generous. Before I go to my third point, here's one other thing I want to say. We have to stop thinking in the small pie syndrome, I will start giving more when I am debt-free, when the student loan is paid for, when the cars are paid for. Or I will start giving more when the kids are out of the house and I don't have all those expenses. Or the worst of these excuses, I will start giving more when I'm dead and I don't have to feel the problems of this and my inheritance can just go, but I have all the money that I need while I'm around. Let's stop doing that and let's start trusting God. He tells us to be generous. Let's be generous and trust that He'll take care of us. Third idea of wrong thinking that we need to correct, and this is for those of us who are regular givers already. Maybe there are probably many of us in this room who give the tithe, the 10%. We understand, we see that's a biblical principle in the Bible, and we've said God expects us to give 10%. I will give 10%, and I'm doing great, and now this message doesn't apply to me because I'm being generous, and I'm meeting that number. God doesn't call us to give a specific amount. He doesn't call us to give the specific figure, percentage. Pastor Brent a few years ago said, God isn't asking for the 10%, the tithe. Actually, He's probably asking for much more than that. So those of you who are 10% givers and you're comfortable with that and you don't really think about giving more, my challenge is to you to say, maybe God wants you to give more. And what you need to do is you need to be listening for those little prompts where God says, you know what? You hear this cause, somebody's making an appeal for money. I want you to give this amount I'm putting in your ear. It's probably an amount that you first think, that's too much, I can't do that, I'll half it. No. When God speaks and he says, give, he's asking for you to be generous. You can't simply say, I meet a threshold and so I'm good. That's not how New Testament generosity works. So we have to recognize that God doesn't need our money, but that generous giving, investing in treasures in heaven, is actually a thrilling opportunity that God has invited us into, and it's not this terrible obligation. When we store up treasures in heaven through generous giving, we actually receive blessings many times over what that dollar would have been worth if spent on what we want to spend it on. Here are some benefits of generous giving. The first is we experience great joy. When you give to something that you are really excited about and you see the church do great work with that money, or you see the person that you give that gift to so excited that God answered their prayer to meet that need, and you're like, wow, God, you used me to answer their prayer. You experience this rush of joy. And that's fantastic. We also grow in our faith when we stop saying, I'm going to depend on myself. But we say, God, I trust you. I'm going to give this gift even though I don't know how you're going to make ends meet. I feel like you're saying I should give this amount. And I'm going to trust you. And then when God comes through, you grow in your faith. You also learn obedience. Maybe you hear that prompt, you're supposed to do this. I need to start giving more regularly to the church, but I don't want to. Well, guess what? Obedience is sometimes doing things that in your heart you don't naturally want to do, but it's like a muscle that grows the more you exercise it. And if you learn obedience and giving, that's one way for you to grow in how you follow Jesus going forward in other hard things that he's going to ask you to do. And finally, we follow God's lead when we're generous givers. Let's think about this. God is the first giver ever in the universe. As he created the entire world, and he gave it to Adam and Eve and said, hey, it's yours, manage it. Take care of it, multiply, enjoy it. It's an incredible gift. And we, through history, completely ruined it, destroyed it, marred it, made a mess of the gift. And so he's the greatest giver in that he follows up with it and he says, okay, now here's my son. I give him for you. God is this incredible, generous giver, and he's calling us to go and do likewise. If we want to live a life that honors God, let's live how God lives, and that's with generous hearts that are willing to give. So here's my challenge to you this week. Take a moment to evaluate, how are you investing your treasure? How are you storing up treasures in heaven? Are you investing your time, your talents, and your treasure? And this isn't a pick one multiple choice. We should be doing all of these. We should be investing our time in the kingdom, in sharing our faith with other people, in discipling those around us, in coming to church and serving in various ways. We should be sharing our skills. Some of you have incredible skills that could help the church. And in addition to those, we should also be sharing our treasure, our finances. How often are you making deposits into your heavenly bank account? Are you making one grand gesture at the end of each year, putting in, you know, some amount, $1,000, and being like, wow, that's amazing, I did that, but doing nothing the other 51 weeks of the year? Or are you regularly making investments into this account? Have you created a lifestyle of investing your heavenly treasure? Another question, what's holding you back from making more investment in your heavenly treasures? To declutter your finances, is it time that you sell the boat or that you look at that car payment that's so much and say, I don't really need this much of a car. I could sell this and get a much cheaper car and not have payments. Is it time to take simpler vacations or to go to nice restaurants less? What is your thing that perhaps you have overindulged, you've made your treasure on earth, that God is telling you right now, hey, I want you to take that and give that up so that you can invest more in heaven. You're never going to regret a dollar spent on heavenly things. And so this week, please, please, please take a moment by yourself if you're single, with your spouse if you're married. If you're married, you cannot do this alone. That does not work. Typically, it's the type A finance person who's like, gotta cut out this, this, and this. That doesn't work, okay? You have to do this together. But look at it. and decide, where is it that God's showing you he wants you to be more generous in investing in heavenly treasure? Or where, what are the things that are holding you back and keeping you from being able to do what you want to do? And make a change to your budget and say, you know, I understand I have to make a point to build up my heavenly bank account. Not only for me, but for God, for the kingdom, because this is where my heart is. This is what I care most about. I am most devoted to God and not to my belongings. When we're young, our lives are really simple. They're not as cluttered as they are today. We have less stuff, less baggage, fewer time commitments, and fewer financial obligations. Children really do have it much easier. We don't appreciate it when we're kids, but when we're adults, we look back and we go, man, that was a simpler life. Now, as adults, we have all of this clutter in our lives and all of this complexity, all of this stuff in our home, our past mistakes that litter our soul, our overscheduled and overspent lives. And it's because of all these things that we lose sight of our God who simply wants to have relationship with us. So this series of spring cleaning has been meant for us to focus on saying, God, what do I need to strip away from my life so I have more time for you? Jesus tells us, take my yoke, for my yoke is easy, my burden is light. He wants to make this exchange, and we need to take him up on this. And that means giving up some of the things that we think are so important to us, to follow him, to have time with him, to give him our sin, our stuff, our debt payments. Say, God, you can take all that. I want your yoke. I just want to live the life you've called me to live. So let's get rid of the excess in our lives. Let's confess our sin and shame to him once and for all. Let's sit quietly and listen for his whisper to bring clarity to our chaos. And today, let's evaluate how we're investing in heavenly treasure and what we can do to increase that investment. Every minute and every dollar that we put to good use will have an eternal reward. Let's trust God with that. And let's see how much can we give for his kingdom and for his glory.